lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones, bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. I'm happy to be back and glad to be alive and well in March 6, 2017. What a amazing, crazy, uncertain time to be alive. But the good thing is that we're here, we're affecting what's going on. Each one of us, everyone that's listening to the show tonight, everyone alive on this earth is having a say in what's happening. We're creating this reality, and it's on us to make it better for ourselves, for everyone else, for the next generation, the animals and plants on this earth, and the future of everything, the future of our species and all that stuff. That's all in our hands right now, because we're at a point in time where we've got the tools. Human beings have the tools to destroy the whole earth and even beyond that. And so this is why, one of the reasons why we live in such an interesting time. You know, most people that have lived in the past, they didn't have the access to these kind of tools. The good and the bad, the weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons, thermonuclear weapons, and who knows what kind of crazy shit they have that we don't even know about that could just wipe out the whole place. And then, things like the internet, where everybody around the world is connected, and this, mass media that we're dealing with, like with our new homepage, where it's connecting journalists with the public and everybody's participating in the news cycle. And how, this technology is disrupting things. I've been getting a little more into cryptocurrencies and stuff and circumventing ways around the Federal Reserve currency, the U.S. dollar, getting out of the banking system, getting more self-reliant in various different ways. I mean, these are just little things that we can do in our personal lives that when they get mass adoption, it can cause major chain reactions and disruptions in the system, and hopefully shake things up for the better. Anyway, that being said, let's get our show started here tonight. I'm joined by my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, dude?
Hey, Nick. Not a whole lot, man. Just watching this circus of a freaking Obamagate now, all these gates within the first, 5 weeks or something. I mean, meanwhile, they're passing bill after bill that's basically stripped out most of the federal most of the good things the Fed did and left a lot of the bad stuff. So we're going to have to see if this is reorganization or the beginning of the end, meaning the privatization of our country. But what it could also mean, and it's kind of strange too, is he's saying he wants to lower a lot of corporate taxes, and that's going to bring back something like $1 trillion that is offshored right now. That just says to me, man, that the last, what, like 50 years of our government, or plus maybe the reason JFK lost his head is because all this offshoring, the years and years these guys didn't pay taxes. Meanwhile, places like Flint are literally killing people because of this crap.
Yeah, it really is interesting to see just how some people get away with whatever the hell they want to get away with, you know. And you know me, you guys all know that I'm not an advocate of taxation. I don't believe in compulsory taxation. But we live in an involuntary society where everyone is, well, most people are forced to do things that they may or may not agree with. One of those things is, you know, we're all forced to pay compulsory taxes that go to fund things like war and killing people and blown up babies in Iraq and Syria and toppling governments in Libya and things like that. You know, we all fund that stuff, whether you have a regular job and pay income tax, or whether you have your own business, or whether you don't, whether you work under the table and you just buy stuff at the store. One way or another, you collect taxes on you, and you pay for a lot of this crap that you may not agree with.
We pay for our own enslavement, because just imagine we have a $6 trillion, I believe it's nearing a $7 trillion bill in our Middle East adventures that was to essentially we went over to eliminate some threats to our way of life, supposedly secure new oil reserves, secure opium reserves. We don't need those things. We can grow hemp and marijuana that eliminates opium, that eliminates the need for oil. And then with $1 trillion, we can change the entire country to a green economy, with everything being a Tesla car, solar panels instead of roof shingles, and everything solved, man. So when you look at what you pay every day, regardless of your income tax, just your sales tax, look at that alone. Your sales tax is paying for you to go kill people around the world for resources we don't even need.
Mind-blowing stuff. And yeah, it's just, it really is a double standard, because, you know, like you were saying, there are certain companies that have just massive hordes of cash offshore, like, you know, Apple, who many people think of as like, oh, Apple's like a kind of a decent company, you know, they do good things and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
You mean suicide net Apple?
Yeah, you know, and so they have this great public image, but, you know, Apple is one of these companies who sits around and they hoard a bunch of cash offshore. Again, going back to what I said initially, I'm not a advocate of taxation, but it is interesting that the richest of the rich pay very, very few taxes, if anything. Meanwhile, the average, you know, just working class Joe is forced to pay out the yin yang, so to speak, to fund a bunch of this crap that he probably doesn't even agree with.
Did you hear how Romney paid -2%? That's one of the main reasons he ended up basically being unfit to run when they really dug into his finances. He made 15% capital gain tax because he was running a hedge fund. And then he said he spent 2% more than he made. They found out he was just putting it into shell companies, but it was still legal. So he got a tax return on making something like $3 or $4 billion.
Yeah, you know, these rich, extremely rich people create the tax code, and it's so convoluted that nobody can really navigate it without having their own like actual team of tax lawyers. And who can afford to have a tax lawyer? I know I can't. I mean, I have an accountant, but I don't have a tax lawyer. You got to be making a lot of money to be able to afford a tax lawyer. And if you're like, for instance, like with General Electric, what was the account they had? They had like 900 former IRS people working for them or something like that. And so, you know, a lot of these companies help create the tax code so convoluted that everybody gets forced to pay a bunch of money except for them. And then they get to go, and like with GE and other companies, get to go and get us into wars and profit billions of dollars off the wars and make us pay for it.
It's like if you hired an accountant that made you pay no taxes, and then you were like, hey, that guy just paid him all that money. I just paid him for his job's not tax deductible on those taxes I didn't pay. So you're going to give me a refund on the money I just didn't pay you.
Yeah. speaking of that, we got tax day coming up, unfortunately, where everybody's got to get their taxes in order. And I know a bunch of people are going to get a quote unquote refund. that has always blown my mind ever since I was a kid and I started, I hearing about my parents and they're talking about tax refund and stuff. And I, even as a kid, it kind of blew my mind. Like, why do people get a tax refund? Like, if they're going to refund money, why do they take it to begin with? And I didn't understand it as a kid, and I've grown up and I still don't quite understand what the hell the point of the whole thing is.
It's so they have an interest-free loan from the public at large because they're basically making investments with your money that you're just letting them keep, and they're not making you any interest at all.
And the hilarious thing is that people think that they're being done some type of favor. It's like, oh yeah, I'm getting money back. It's like, yeah, but they took that money.
The government did great this year. I'm getting a refund because the government did so good.
Oh, they jacked you, and then they gave you part of it back, and you're happy about that. Okay.
The craziest part about it is that you can – dude, if you're an independent contractor, you literally don't pay any tax if you're a 1099 because everything is deductible.
I'm not going to lie. I do everything I can to pay close to no taxes.
Well, everything's deductible, right, Nick? Even food.
It's not because I hate poor people. It's not because I – whatever it is, the excuses that are given. I, in fact, do everything I can for poor people, and I help people out where I can. But I don't like paying taxes because I disagree with the majority of things that my government is doing with them. And therefore, I'm like morally objecting to them. Though I do have to pay square away with the IRS because otherwise they just literally steal your money. They go into your bank account and they take your money. They don't even ask you. So anyway, that being said, we're also joined tonight by Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake?
Hey, not much. I finished my taxes last week. Man, I was excited. But I swear to God, man, using that TurboTax, like, I'll press one button and I'll be up like $2,000, and then I'll press some button saying at risk, and then I'll go down to like -$1,000. I mean, it's just such complete bullshit. I mean, the whole thing. But
well, if you're -$1,000, you might as well just go to an accountant and pay him $1,000, and they'll make it, at least you'll get something.
No, I got it going.
Remember, strip clubs are tax deductible, Jake.
There you go.
Yeah, shoelaces up too.
Something in an airplane or
some feedback. Microphone. Yeah.
Hurricane right now.
Sound like he was in a hurricane of some sort.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, not much is up with me, but
movie that you're working on, dude.
What's that?
Tell us about this movie that you're working on.
Yeah, well, it's a documentary about this girl, Lisa Lam, that died under very mysterious circumstances in Los Angeles, and a lot of people think she was killed. A lot of people think that it was an accident from her mental illness. Some people think she was possessed. So it's a crazy case. You know, one of the times I called into the show, I was staying at the hotel where she was at, and I couldn't get through. I wasn't on the line, and you said this must be the ghost of Jake.
And that was pretty wild. I remember that. And then you said something. And then it kind of gave out, right?
Yeah, it freaked me the hell out because you didn't know I was staying there.
Yeah.
But anyway, man, it's just the whole case is just, you know, it's everybody has a different conspiracy theory about it. And I just think it's a cultural, just a grisly but interesting cultural artifact. So, yeah, I've been working on that pretty hardcore. And then Saturday I woke up and was just in pure shock that a sitting president and had sent out 6 tweets by 9 a.m. accusing a former president of wiretapping them, which, you know, just about blew my mind. And me and DB have been chatting about, you know, what this portends for the future. Because, I mean, it looks like there's some real, real serious shit that's about to go down.
Yeah, dude. I wanted to talk about that. I guess we might as well go right into that right now because I see a couple different angles. The first thing is that from some people I saw, at least I think the dudes over at the Washington Post were saying that Trump is just trying to distract everybody away from the whole Russia gate thing. And like DB was saying, Trump's got like 10 gates going on right now. So it's hard to keep track of which gate we're talking about. Yeah, they were saying like, oh, they're just trying to distract from, you know, Trump put out this wiretapping tweet because he's trying to distract everyone from the fact that, you know, a bunch of his people are falling like dominoes over these Russian allegations.
That's a crazy distraction tweet, though. Like, that's like if you're trying to like that's crazy. Like there's less harsh things he could do. I mean, that's pretty serious what he's doing right now. I mean, it's...
I don't even think you can compare the two. Like, you have one where the whole Russiagate is essentially Flynn meeting with some ambassador that, I guess, what was his name? McConnell or somebody met with over 20 times talking about sanctions prior to getting into office. Yeah, is that inappropriate? Cool, Flynn's gone. Now you have Sessions has to recuse himself, which he should anyway, just to make it look impartial. But you really only have one guy that's dropped so far. But the main thing is, like, if a president's in office, and because the next person in the regime, the people that are pulling the puppet strings, wants Hillary, now he becomes a spy, a sitting president becomes a spy against a political contender. Well, like, this is some shit that happened in the USSR.
It's crazy.
We've become the USSA.
It is definitely Gestapo tactics. I mean, that's for sure. But to be clear, most people who think that it probably did go down still think it was the Justice Department doing it and that they were actually tapping Russia to escape from, you know, like they didn't tap Trump. They tapped Russia to try and see if there were to see if Trump was coming into those wiretaps. So that would escape from excuse them from tapping Trump, and it would also allow them to see whether he was communicating with Russia. Now my question is, people keep saying, oh, they must have had something, they must have found something if they were doing it. Bullshit. If they had found something showing that Trump colluded with Russia,
they would have used it.
They would have fucking used it by now. Are you kidding me? Like, they obviously didn't find anything, and now they're up shit creek because it looks
what you
like-
have what. You have on Trump is the Steele file, which shows Trump is a dirty, dirty bird. But you know what? He's nothing compared to these pedos that are rife within our government. The guy likes prostitutes and maybe some golden showers. You really think people are going to ever really think about that when they find out how many people are diddling kids, buying kids, selling kids, killing kids? None of those things is going to matter, man. So everything's a distraction against pedo gate, which is the real gate, which is going to drop the deep state, and everything they're doing is a delay tactic. And I'm surprised that we haven't seen or heard of people trying to leave the country yet. Maybe they feel they're invincible or they feel there's no escape for them and they're just going to go down with the ship. But man, this is going to bring down so many people.
And you think this is, and you think some of this is really going to get going with Vault 7 tomorrow?
Yeah, because once video comes out, how do you deny that?
Well, we're about to find out what Vault 7 is all about. We'll be covering that on the Anti-Media homepage of Independent Media tomorrow morning. 70 stories up today on theantimedia.org. Thank you to everyone that is using the homepage and submitting news stories to us under the My News section. Really helps us crowdsourcing the news. That's the name of the game. And it's really just a kind of a new model here. A little bit of a innovative look at the news and the voting system. You decide what stories are important, and you know, we're helping collect them, you're helping collect them, you tell us what's important, and that way it's not us like jamming a narrative down everybody's throats, even though of course I've got my bias, everyone's got their own bias, but what we're doing is kind of getting a crowdsourced narrative out there, hopefully, that is anti-establishment, man. The role of the media is to keep these assholes accountable, keep them honest, and you know, that's what we're trying to do. Joining us now, we've got one of our amazing journalists and analysts, Darius Shadamasibi. I'm sorry, I probably messed up your last name horribly. What's up, Darius? How are you doing tonight, man?
Hey, good, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good. So, Darius, you're joining us all the way out from Samoa, right?
Yeah, still here in Samoa, yes. And don't worry about the last name. It's close enough.
You probably get that a lot, right?
Yeah, I think that I get used to it.
So speaking of the Russians, you were just on RT the other day and they wanted to interview you about a recent article you wrote for the antimedia.org. Tell us a little bit about that. Were you nervous being on international television?
Basically they had seen one of the pieces I wrote on Mosul. And the sort of media bias between Mosul and Aleppo, which is something I think I've written about it before. But so they got in contact and they said they wanted to run a piece and then interview me. I was kind of nervous. I guess. It was my first time, so you know but you know, being on Skype and everything, it's not like you can see your audience. So I think it was fine.
Oh, you did a good job, man, and I'm sure there'll be more of it because your writings have been really good. We've been getting a lot of compliments from some of our people who follow us closely that run other media outlets asking about you and stuff, so great job on that front. So, you know, as kind of a outside observer of U.S. politics, I know Samoa is kind of falls under the sphere of U.S. influence in many ways, but there's no doubt that, you know, it's definitely outside of the country. What do you make of what we were just talking about with all this stuff going on with Trump and how, you know, the blaming the Russians for Trump, and then now Trump is blaming Obama for wiretapping him? I want to get your take on this, and then I'm going to give my take. So, Darius, I mean, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think that the previous pundits, they really hit the nail on the head. I mean, from an outsider, I'm surprised that there is anyone really buying these kinds of this kind of take on what's been happening. I mean, the idea that Hillary lost because somehow Russia like intervene when I mean, if Trump had lost, they wouldn't say that it was a Saudi interference, you know, even though the sort of documented instances of Saudi funding and everything going to the Clinton campaign, even in New Zealand. So New Zealand is where I'm where I've been living for the past, well, half of my life. So the New Zealand government was caught funneling money to Hillary Clinton's campaign as well. So I'm not sure what the idea that Trump, the whole Trump-Russia thing seems to be a bit of a non-story, because for me, the real benefactor of Trump is Israel. You know, he's got a diehard Israel stance, and he's pushing against Iran. But the other thing I want to say is what I saw today, someone sent me. I think the Washington Post must have had an article today. And I'm not sure how direct it was, but it's sort of hinting that, you know, with Trump, if they can sort of oust Trump and then Pence gets to take the lead, then they kind of have the Clinton-esque policies, the anti-Russia things that they, you know, that they were hoping were going to happen under Clinton anyway. So I think that's the kind of thing we're seeing at the moment.
Interesting take. And, you know, there's been so much political capital and propaganda capital put into dehumanizing Russia. You know, the U.S., you know, barely got out of the Cold War, you know, like 25, 30 years ago and stuff. But the Cold War went on for a very long time. And there was a lot of propaganda that was put into the United States to scare the shit out of Americans, to make, you know, to just be completely afraid of the USSR, which of course is based de facto, now it's just Russia, more or less. So there's all that old propaganda that still lingers in the back of people's heads. And so I think they figure, well, why not bring it back? You know, bring back that anti-Russian stuff, because maybe America was starting to grow weary of the war on terror, and maybe there were the military-industrial complex, the people that make all the money from all these wars were thinking like, oh, well, you know, they're getting kind of tired of this narrative that we're going to go fight chasing terrorism around the world and defeat it, because it's become pretty apparent that you just don't – you can't defeat terrorism. Terrorism is a tactic. You don't beat tactics. Tactics are tactics. It's not an enemy in the battlefield, you know? So I think maybe Americans are growing a bit wary of that stuff. I know definitely our audience and the people who follow us have basically come to question the war on terror. But Russia is a great boogeyman, you know, the big bear that we could all kind of scapegoat and say, hey, look at the bad stuff they're doing. And it's easy to say, oh, look how bad Putin is, and don't look how bad the U.S. government is or what we're doing. And that's kind of like the exact point you made in your article that RT wanted to talk about, was how the U.S. was obsessed. The media was obsessed with Aleppo, to the point where, you know, Hillary Clinton during the campaign was basically calling for a no-fly zone over there, which would have had very dangerous implications. You know, and so the media was like completely obsessed with Aleppo. Now, those not familiar with it, it's a big city in Syria where the Syrian government recently took back the entire city from the rebels over there that were backed by the U.S. And Russia was backing the Syrian government, and the Syrian government won, and they've taken Aleppo back. And it was basically a huge story in the media, and there was just so many people going around saying, we can't let this happen, we can't let this happen, there's a slaughter going on, it's horrible, it's horrible, it's horrible. Don't get me wrong, I agree with that, it is horrible. It didn't have to be that way. The U.S. didn't have to back the opposition, we didn't have to arm the rebels, we didn't have to fund the rebels. Saudi Arabia didn't have to go over there and like more or less create ISIS and create all that problem. It didn't have to be that way. It's horrible what happened over there. But the same exact people who were crying and, you know, trying to get people to go send more and more military, you know, capital into Syria to defend Aleppo are now completely silent about Mosul, which is more or less a bigger city than Aleppo. There's more civilians trapped in there. But the only difference really is that the U.S. is backing the siege of Mosul and Russia was backing the siege of Aleppo. And that's really the main difference. Darius, I mean, am I missing something here, or is that pretty much it?
No, I agree. I think the only real difference, if you're going to be really technical about it, the only real difference is that U.S. goal in Mosul is supposedly to liberate the area from ISIS, whereas in Aleppo, you know, ISIS, they didn't really have a stronghold there. But I mean, that's kind of one of the issues I've been trying to raise with this whole war on terror and everything that's been going on, particularly in Syria. I mean, there's a report that came out, I think 2014, that if ISIS were defeated, there's 65,000 fighters with the same ideology and the same, you know, the same ideas that would just take their place. And these are the same people that are, you know, that were holding Aleppo. And on top of that, the report concluded there's no point distinguishing between the groups on the ground because they all work together. So you know, the media was saying, you know, oh, well, Russia is bombing these rebels, but this is an exercise I really recommend everyone does. Every time you see the media like quote a rebel group, just search the rebel group and then have a read about it. Every time I've done it, they have been aligned with Al Qaeda. So I don't know. The media is playing this really funny game, and that's our job, you know. But we only have limited reach. I mean, they broadcast to everyone this kind of news, and you know, that's one of my main issues with the reporting that's been going on.
Yeah,
they even give some rebel groups Oscars.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, crazy media hypocrisy going on over there in the Middle East. And you know, one thing that I've noticed that is very interesting, going back to this anti-Russian narrative that is the new hot, you know, the hot new media narrative, is that I don't know if you guys noticed this, but almost all of the news outlets that covered the Trump meltdown on Twitter on Saturday, where he said his phones were being tapped, the headline says, "Without evidence, Donald Trump accuses Obama of tapping his phones." So first of all, there's a kind of a clear bias there, obviously. But the second thing is that, going back to the whole Russia narrative, where's the evidence for that? Like there's not, I haven't seen any concrete evidence yet. Now, is there circumstantial evidence? Yeah. But when did circumstantial evidence start holding up in court or anything like that? Not that I know of. So, you know, basically they're coming out and they're saying, well, Donald Trump is saying all this stuff without giving any evidence. And then a couple hours later, they come out with a story accusing Russia of doing something in the United States by quoting some unnamed official within the CIA or something without giving any evidence, any. And, you know, I've been patiently waiting for the evidence on this Russia thing so that I can make a decision on what it is I truly believe. Because right now, I can't even tell you. I can't even say, you know what? The Russian thing is bullshit, or you know what, the Russian thing is legit. I can't even say that because there's no evidence to prove either way. I find it very hypocritical that the media is wanting evidence that Trump Tower had its phones tapped, and at the same time doesn't want to give any evidence that the Russians were, say, you know, hacking into, you know, the Democratic National Committee or whatever. And these two things are pretty similar, you know, so you would think there would be a little bit of consistency there with, you know, okay, Russia's hacking, or the U.S. government was basically hacking into Trump's phone lines. These are
very damn it, Nick, they can't expose Guccifer 2.0.
Oh, dude. And now here's the other thing, and here's the thing that I find the funniest, and Darius, I want your opinion on this, because here in the U.S., the people are pretty much conditioned pretty badly to just accept the fact that mass surveillance is just a everyday occurrence, and that all of our communications are being eavesdropped on. And, you know, I mean, everyone I know covers up the damn camera on their laptop and their microphones on their laptops and shit, because they know that someone's probably or could be listening if they wanted to. What I find interesting is that everyone in the media is like, oh, Trump's crazy, he's saying that they tapped his phone lines. Like, I thought, from what I know, from what I read from, you know, the Snowden leaks and all that, almost all of our communications are tapped, not just Trump's. Trump isn't unique by any means. But I find a couple of things ironic. So first of all, I find it ironic that the media is flipping out about this and saying, he has no evidence. Like, well, Snowden already gave us the evidence. Everybody's shit is tapped. The NSA is tapping everyone's shit. And to think that the NSA is actually legitimately being used to stop terrorism, it's not. It's not, because they don't stop terrorism. The NSA, in my opinion, is used for political reasons. It's used for corporate espionage and, you know, corporate reasons and stuff like that. But, you know, it's the deep state. The NSA is a political apparatus. It's not used to stop terrorism, because if they did, they're There wouldn't be any terrorism because they snoop on everybody. So there's that. And then the real funny thing is that Trump is talking about how wrong it is to have your wires tapped. Trump is the one in charge of the surveillance apparatus now. Like, he could stop that stuff. Like, he could issue executive orders to roll back a bunch of this surveillance stuff, but apparently it's only a problem when he's being spied upon, right? That to me is like, dude, Trump, shut your mouth, dude.
Can't he just turn it around on Obama right now in that house he just bought 2 miles from the White House where he's living with Valerie Jarrett? Just wire the shit out of that.
Oh, man. Yeah, dude.
Dude, start a new reality show that Obama doesn't even know he's on.
That'd be a good one. Government Apprentice. I want to first get Darius' take, and then I want to ask Jake, because Jake's like our resident dystopian surveillance guy. So, Darius, I mean, what do you think about this Trump tirade, dude, about his wires being tapped and, you know, just the whole mass surveillance debate? Do you find it, like, is everyone around the world, like, laughing their asses off at us? Or am I just thinking that's the case right now?
Yeah, well, okay, so there's a lot to kind of, like, where do I begin, really? So, with the specific Trump thing, one of the things I had a quick look today, and one of the tweets was like, this is one of Trump's tweets. I'd bet that any good lawyer could make a pretty good case or something. And then I retweeted, I mean, that's just the words of someone who doesn't have evidence. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I bet that a lawyer could make a good case. I mean, if you had the case, I mean, you would present the case, when you, I don't know why you'd need to bet money on it. So the other thing regarding, like, surveillance in general, I was always writing and stuff, but that's when I became a political writer. The first article I ever published on Truthout was to do with the surveillance state, because it really does have really far-reaching. So New Zealand is part of what they call the Five Eyes Network, and I think it's Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the U.S., probably the U.K., I think. And we actually had our government sort of amend our laws and stuff, because, like, say, for example, the Kim.com raid was deemed to be illegal, so they basically just switched the law so that, you know, made it legal afterwards. And that was what really kind of... what's the word? Sort of militarized. No, not militarized, but it got me going, you know. And then all these. So a journalist that I'm quite familiar with, he's a very famous journalist in New Zealand, he started working on the Snowden leaks with The Intercept, and they were publishing a lot of stuff specific to New Zealand. So for example, like, now I'm here in Samoa, they found that the New Zealand government is sharing information with the United States, you know, like, just basic communications, like, from Samoa and from other Pacific islands and things. And that's the kind of thing, I mean, it's just so unnecessary. And on top of it, you've got, so the Samoan prime minister comes out and says, oh, you know, I don't care, you guys shouldn't care. And he knows the population. It's almost like the U.S., like, what he's like the Trump of the U.S., you know. So what he says, and then they go, okay, well, we don't have to worry. But it's not like, I'd prefer it if they just actually discussed it. But when you just say, oh, no, don't worry about it. I mean, so in terms of surveillance, I mean, the implications are just, it's all over the world. And in terms of everyone laughing at, like, I mean, okay, so for us, we're still wondering how on earth did you guys get this, put Trump in? So I don't even know where to begin with that one. I mean, it's certainly entertaining, but very, very frightening at the same time.
It shows how absolutely awful Clinton was as a choice, how they destroyed Bernie Sanders' chances, and he would have destroyed Trump. So that's what they get, man.
Yeah, it's crazy as it is. The political establishment in this country, which many people have come to accept as just kind of one entity, even though, of course, it's the left and the right and the Democrats and the Republicans, I think many people have come to accept that it's, you know, the real power players, they call the shots, are kind of just one group. It's not two competing groups. It kind of, to me, it goes to show that they would rather take a crazy lunatic over a progressive in Bernie
Sanders. Because once we went socialist, we would have never went back, and they could have never got that money back we would have took from the military to pay for all that free stuff. We have plenty of money to pay for all that stuff Bernie wanted to do. It's just we would have had to take it from the military, and they could not have that.
Yeah, it is interesting the way that spending is looked at. And we posted a meme about this today on the Anti-Media Facebook page about how it's – Whenever it's about war, you know, whenever it's, oh, we need to go take care of Syria and we need to go topple the government and go topple Gaddafi and we need to go back into Iraq and we need to extend the, you know, occupation of Afghanistan and stuff. No one's ever asking how much this stuff costs, right? It costs a lot of money, a lot of money. In fact, it's probably the biggest, you know, budgetary thing is the defense spending, the military spending.
We just jumped 10%, Nick. Wasn't that like $60 billion they just added on? Couldn't that pay for the healthcare and the college plan?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, Bernie Sanders, again, going back to where I stand politically, I am not a government education type of person. And, you know, I think the government should get out of as many industries as possible. That being said, it is very interesting to see how they react, how people in the media and the political establishment reacted to Bernie Sanders when he said, well, we're going to get free college to all these kids. And everyone's like, oh, well, how are you going to pay for it? How are you going to pay for it? And like, they even asked him in the debates and like in the interviews, well, how are you going to pay for this stuff? And then Trump comes along and is like, well, we're going to make the military huge and we're going to rebuild it. And then they're, you know, it's just like, oh, okay, cool. Tell us how you feel about Muslims. It's like, wait, how is he going to pay for all of this militarism and quote unquote rebuilding the military, which is already the largest, most advanced, most futuristic military in the world? You know, it's like the spending isn't a problem when it's military, but anything else, it's like, well, how are we going to pay for, you know, healthcare? How are we going to pay for education? And how are we going to pay for retirement and all these other things? It's like it's like all of a sudden people are worried about the budgetary issues. We've got $20 trillion in debt and they're worried about these budgetary issues. But like you said, DB, $600 billion a year on military?
No, it's 660 now. It's 660 now, Nick. Yeah. They added $60 billion. That pays for Bernie's college and healthcare. It pays for Medicare for all, and it pays for free tuition for all state and federal universities for all. Like, it doesn't take a lot of money.
They should just add on another six just to make it 666.
Exactly. Like, what I just heard you say, Nick, with pensions, with healthcare, with education, you know why they don't care? Because they just added money to the military, so obviously they plan on using that military, and a bunch of people are just going to be gone, and they don't need to worry about it, right?
Almost seems that way, man. It almost does. Speaking on the military stuff, Darius is basically our foreign policy writer focusing on the Middle East and what's going on with Russia and all that stuff. And Darius, considering this is your first time on our show and you've been covering this stuff really closely, give us a quick breakdown of what you see happening right now. You know, what do you see going on in the Middle East and with Russia? I know you mentioned Iran, and I'm definitely concerned about this anti-Iranian rhetoric that's coming up right now within the Trump administration. And of course, they're trying to push him closer to conflict with Russia. There was just news out today. I read over, it was on the antimedia.org homepage, but it was from antiwar.com. It was talking about how now Trump is basically going back on a lot of his plans to like reconcile with Russia and make more or less, you know, come to peace come to terms with Russia. Now, Trump is going back on a lot of that stuff because I think a lot of it has to do with all of this stuff going around with, oh, Trump's working with the Russians and this guy's working with the Russians and this guy, everybody's working with the Russians. So now anytime Trump goes and actually does something positive with the Russians, well, then it's going to be some kind of conspiracy. And it's, well, it's because Trump is in the pocket of Putin and blah, 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 blah. Darius, I mean, what do you see going on in the bigger picture right now, geopolitically in the Middle East with, you know, Russia and the U.S. and everybody trying to make their moves over there?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things to sort of note here. I guess what it is what you would probably refer to as the deep state, or whatever it makes up of, whatever it consists of, the, you know, CIA and whoever pulls the strings, who, you know, Trump, one of the only really decent things about Trump was that he was saying, you know what, I'm not interested in pushing Russia all the time, I actually want to get along, which, you know, is not necessarily a bad thing. So there's obviously people who are saying, you know, we can't have that, this cannot happen, and they're sending a pretty clear message with those leaks. One of the pieces I reported on was the how the leaks basically ousted Michael Flynn, and then they replaced him with like a really staunch Cold Warrior. And that's the kind of, I think when it comes to these kinds of interests, no matter how many times they're failing, it kind of shows the desperation. Because basically, if you're being honest, you know, they lost in Syria. They were supposed to probably have taken them out maybe 2013 at the latest. They're probably, that's when Obama wanted to order airstrikes on Assad. And even then, it was very desperate. It was like, there's been a chemical weapons attack. I need to attack right now. And we're saying, well, you know, can we have an investigation? I mean, look, we've got Carla Del Ponte from the UN saying that it looks like the rebels were doing it. So, you know, well, what's your rush kind of thing? And that's the kind of thing we're seeing. Like even Trump was saying, you know, we're not going to focus on Assad and Syria. We're going to focus on ISIS. And I guess people, and the fact that he's kind of been delivering on a lot of his promises early on, people are saying, are probably trying to show him, send a message, you know, this can't happen. Like, I guess with Syria, they can sort of leave a weakened Assad maybe. But the ultimate goal that I always thought, and I've been reporting on for a while, that in Syria was that the ultimate goal was Iran, Syria's closest ally, bound by a mutual defense agreement. Because the issue is that Iranian influence is spreading. You know, the biggest winner from the Iraq war in 2003 was Iran, because they got rid of Saddam Hussein, a very anti-Iranian, you know, guy who spent years gassing.
I think we've lost a little audio there from Darius. The rest of you guys hear me still? DB, you there?
Yeah, I'm good.
I hear you.
All right, we lost some audio from Darius. We'll see if we can get him back.
Well, he's only on the other side of the world, right?
He's halfway across the world, and I'm surprised there's such little lag. But he was bringing up a point about Iran and how the Iranians have kind of been the biggest benefactor from the us getting rid of, you know, Saddam Hussein. That has been pretty interesting. Pretty interesting development, and, you know, it kind of goes to show, I guess, the Iranians have an organic movement going on over there, and there's like a Shia rising movement, and the counterbalance over there is Sunni Saudi Arabians, who have been trying to manufacture their movement via terrorism, via ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all that stuff. And, you know, of course, they're very close allies with the United States.
And what I read, Nick, is that the Houthi youth movement is, they generally are winning. Like, you know?
Yeah. I think we got Darius back. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you back.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So, yeah, you're making a point about how the Iranian influence has been growing ever since the fall of Saddam Hussein. And I was just kind of elaborating on that a little bit. But yeah, go ahead and continue.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so basically, I think the ultimate goal, if you look at the memo of seven countries and the travel ban, which were very similar. So General Wesley Clark's exposed list of seven countries the U.S. was going to topple. I think the ultimate goal was Iran, because Iran's the big, you know, I think is it the third largest oil producer? Very resistant, you know, they're very hard to control, and they used to control it until the revolution. So I think the ultimate goal was, you know, if you look at Bush, he invaded Iraq, and then he was just kind of like, I don't really care what happens to Iraq. You know, Iran is building nuclear weapons. It's time to go in. But it never really happened. So Trump's, I think, one thing that Trump's obviously doing right is that he hates Iran, and that kind of fits in quite nicely with their plan. But I think they're keeping the... So at the same time as pushing the sort of Bush-style rhetoric against Iran, they're keeping the Syria option open. So, for example, they'll be sending troops there, and so is Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia's intention is to keep the liberated areas from falling into the hands of Syria and Iran. And I just think, what's the legal basis to go into... It'd be like Mexico going into the U.S. and saying, you know, you can't take this part of your country back. It just, there's no legal basis for it. So I think, you know, to what extent would they enforce that? Will they fight off Iranian troops, and then what? So I think that's the kind of thing we might be looking at, and I don't see it ending well.
It's getting really complicated over there because, you know, as you say, what has been a proxy war for the most part, where it's kind of... the U.S. sending arms mostly to like the Saudis, and then but also directly to the rebels, and us kind of financing and arming the opposition to Assad. And on the other hand, you've got Russia and the Iranians arming Assad and his government and backing them up. What has been a proxy war is now that the proxy forces have kind of failed. You know, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia is now talking about actually sending in troops into Syria. That is a very, very dangerous situation, because what happens when, you know, Syria starts shooting Saudi Arabians and then Saudi Arabians start shooting Russians? You know, we're looking at a very precarious situation that could wind up dragging a bunch of other people into a big conflict. You know, judging by what we've been seeing with a lot of this anti-Russian rhetoric and the leaks coming out against Trump and the way they took down Flynn and the way that they're taking down Sessions, don't get me wrong, I can't stand Sessions either. But the way they're going about it, it just goes to show that they're trying to lay down some groundwork to make an anti-Russian, you know, movement. No matter what, even if Trump is in office. So it does seem like they're trying to at least maybe not go to a big war with Russia, but at least keep us on the brink so that we can keep on justifying this huge military budget, keep on building up and you know, keep on doing this arms race, I guess, even though there's no competition really. Except
and the final end game, just because I always inevitably feel like we'll get to this, is Taiwan.
Yeah, when we start looking at China and stuff, you know, which is going to be the big player coming up, and it's been kind of quiet on the China front. I don't know if you guys have noticed that. News has kind of gone quiet out of China in the past week or two, and so you know we got to always keep a tab on what's going on over there. So, Darius, anything else you want to talk about going on over there in the Middle East, dude? Any other observations?
No, I think that's the main one. My main, I guess, the big story that I've had this year would be the sort of upcoming war on Iran. I think I'm not the biggest criticism people have given me is that, you know, it would never happen. He knows that Russia, you know, are defending Iran. But then I think that if you look really closely, that's the kinds of things that they're trying to set up, is a kind of like if we can appease the Russians a little bit, maybe they'll back off, and you know, like, and maybe they'll sort of let us have it, which clearly didn't happen in Syria. I don't know why they think it will happen. I mean, Iran is a much greater value, in my opinion, than Syria was. But and like what, like you just mentioned, that the other thing, of course, is China, which when you think of, when you look at why is Iran a threat? I mean, really, it's because of China in a way, like, you know, these kind of resistance states, and China's sort of becoming the rising power, the rising match in terms of economy and military. So I think that's the other thing to keep an eye on.
Darius, one thing I want to ask, because I know you're a big geopolitical guy like myself, is if you look around at everything immediately on China's borders, do you see anybody, including India, that could stop their army if they wanted to take over those resources and those populations? Because I see China basically within like maybe 6 months in direct control of 2 billion people and maybe like a third of the total resources in the world. I mean, if they feel desperate, I feel like they would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's I'm probably not the best person to ask on that particular thing, but I'm not sure what kind of. I feel like the United States for a long time was playing a kind of game of chicken with these resistant states, you know, China and Russia and Iran. And then after a while, I think, you know, sooner or later, someone has to kind of take that first step. And I don't think China, I mean, China is saying, you know, we don't want a problem with you, but we're not going to back down once you guys, I mean, they're well aware they're being encircled by bases and all the threats, you know, Japan constantly provokes them but hides under the nuclear umbrella. So I'm not sure what kind of, what the United States has in mind. I think that's why we see a lot of provocation against North Korea, because, I mean, what's the value of North Korea? It's only valuable because, you know, the proximity to China. North Korea's only real ally is China, and possibly Iran now as well. So it just depends on, you know, how far in this game of chicken the United States wants to go and wants to push its closer allies towards China. So I'm not really sure what to expect.
Yeah, it is really complicated. Now, before the show started, I got some breaking news from one of those French newswire services, AFP. The U.S. announced that it's going to be moving a missile defense system into South Korea. So this is going to be very big news tomorrow. You know, putting a missile defense system into South Korea, really, that's they like to say that it's for defense, but that's like saying the U.S. has a defense budget. It's more of like, okay, we're using this to go make war around the world. And it's the same thing that is going on in Eastern Europe. You know, they're putting up missile defense systems, and every time it goes up, Russia complains because they feel that it's an aggressive move, not a defensive move. So putting a missile defense system in South Korea is, you know, I was just saying a few minutes ago that the news out of China has been quiet. Well, tomorrow that's all going to change. China is going to be very upset about this, and so we're going to see what's going to happen, play out with that. But you know, there's fires going on right now all over the world. You can only put so many of them out. The thing that is really important here, as a person in the U.S., for me and people here, we've got an empire on our hands, and it's spread thin, and it's all around the world, and it's in big trouble. There's a lot of different factors. There's internal strife. The dudes here in California and Berkeley just over the weekend were beating each other over the head with sticks because they don't agree politically. I mean, we're dealing with internal strife. We're dealing with a worldwide empire that is in not good shape. We're in for some interesting time. Thank you all for tuning in. Darius, thanks for joining us. DB, Jake, peace out, guys. Catch you one thing.
Thank you for having me.
I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.